thing on Sadiq Ahmed Bey's, about three quarters of the way down the Ormuz line against Kulong Mason, around about the middle of the white line. Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, even when Kulong Mason happened, Chaim at the point. Okay, we had a simon before. There were five groups of goyim or minim or what have you who asked five different chachamim for proofs for tefillah making. So we had the first one yesterday that the minim actually looked him, asked Rabbi Gamliel, and he started bringing them proofs from different psukim until finally he brought them psukim where we say Ashenishba Hashem laviseichem laseis lahem, meaning and then the Eretz Yisrael wasn't given to them because they themselves didn't possess it during their lifetime. It means that it will be given to them laosid lavi by tefillah making. Next one, Shalu Roimim as Rabbi Yisrael ben Chananya. The Roimim, the woman, asked Rabbi Yisrael ben Chananya. Minayin shachar tzoch mechayim. How do we know two things? Number one, that the Eidoshter will revive the dead, and two, the Adem Masha Osim Liyas, and that the Eidoshter knows what's going to be in the future. Now, what's the connection between the two questions, and what do they mean? How do we know Hashem knows the future? The whole Tanakh is full of the Eidoshter telling them to be able to predict the future. So there's many different explanations on it, one of them being the basic idea behind that they're asking how do we know that Eidoshter knows the future is the famous thing we have in the Rambam, the famous question, how is it that a person has Bechira Chavshis if everything in the world is controlled by the Eidoshter? So basically they're going along the lines of that. What that has to do with Tchisa Mesim, there's a lot of different explanations. One of them, one interesting one we learned earlier on the Omer, one of the sources for the concept of Tchisa Mesim is the prophet says that you should give truma to Aaron HaKohen, but Aaron HaKohen never received truma during his lifetime, so he never actually entered Eretz Yisrael. And the Kamas Chesa Mason in Aserda. So they're arguing, this is a vote from Heschel of Krakow, one of the Rebbeim of the Shach. He says, the voters are asking, who says that it means that the Eretz is going to be Mechaya Mason? Maybe it means when that pasuk was dictated to Moshe, it's before the chet by the rock over there where they hit the rock instead of speaking to it. Maybe at that point, David says, so to speak, didn't know yet that Aaron is going to sin and therefore he's not going to come and carry Israel. So therefore, the two things go together. How do you know that David knows what's going to be in the future and is going to be Mechaya Mason? There's a lot of other different explanations. Another one from Ben Yoyada, but the question is, you're telling me the Eidoshter is going to be Mechaim Mesim. How does the Eidoshter know that they're not going to, once they're alive again, they're not going to do Averis again? Why should the Eidoshter be Mechaim Mesim then if they might end up doing Averis again? And there's a lot of different explanations. Anyway, well, we know that because the Ruach has a Tumah Avim and Aris, but the Rumiyim don't know that concept necessarily.
They're the Tumah.
Yes. Says, I can prove to you both things from this one topic. We quoted this earlier, that behold, you will lie with your fathers, and this people will get up and stray after gods. So the word become has a double meaning over there. It's you will lie with your fathers, meaning you will die, but you will get up. And also the Kama Omazel, also this nation, will get up and worship of a desire. Therefore, we have both. The Eidoshter is Mechaim Mason, because Hinnah Chasech Amazel Hakam, and the Eidoshter knows what's going to happen in the future, because the Kama Omazel Hazana. So they ask the Dilma of the Kama Omazel Hazana. Maybe it only has the one meaning, but the Kama goes with the second half of the body, and the people will arise and worship and stray after other gods.
So Hashem knows the future.
Hashem knows the future. So he says, fine, the Kotumiya Pagamiya Daichu, fine, at least you have, hello? Fine, at least you can hold half in your hands. In other words, fine, at least you have half the answer. Dear Dam, Hashem Sulias, fine, at least you can see from this pasuk because the Eidoshter knows what's going to happen in the future. So Ben Yehoyada explains, the point is, once you understand that first half, that the Eidoshter knows what's going to happen in the future, automatically it means the Eidoshter knows that the people are not going to do Averis in the future after the, therefore, you automatically have the second half of the answer. Therefore, the Eidoshter can be Mechaim Esim without any compunctions that they might do Averis. The Chassam Sofer brings from his Rebbe of Nosson Ablo an interesting vote why he chose this particular pasuk. I mean, you have many psukim that express the idea that Eidoshter knows the future, and you have many psukim that express the idea of Tchiyas Mesim. He says because the two things are connected. We know that Moshe had to die in Chutzpah. It's an order that Mesim or Chutzpah will come back when it comes to Tchiyas Mesim. They'll come with him, otherwise they're going to be left there.
On the other hand, if Moshe himself had come into Eretz Yisrael, he would have eradicated the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. They never would have worshipped Avodah Zarah. There never would have been a Churban. There never would have been a Golah. So therefore, the two things go together. Because in Chasheichem Ramasech Bakom, because you're going to lie with your fathers, and eventually there's going to be a Tzeis HaMesim, which you're going to lead the Mesim of Chutz La'aretz, therefore it's going to have to happen. Therefore, it's going to end up happening that Bakom or Amazeh, therefore, because they're not there to lead you, you're not there to lead them, therefore they're going to end up straying after Avodah Zarah. So there is that connection there.
It's Marnami. We say also in a Braita, it's not just a question from the Ruinim. All of you from the Shum of Shum and Yechoy. Minayin Shakosh Baruch Mechai Meisim Yedei Masa Ozu Liyot. How do we know that the Ebeshter is going to be Mechai Meisim and that the Ebeshter knows what's going to be in the future, even when it involves Bechir HaKavshit? Shenem Hin Choshech Lema Vesech HaBakam B'gomer. And this word B'kam has a double meaning, that it means that you'll get up with Tzeis HaMeisim and that the people will get up and stray after Avodah Zarah. After Moshe dies, well, after Yeshua died, actually, yeah, they're just predicting that the people are going to worship Avodah Zarah. After Moshe and Yeshua died, historically, within a couple of decades after they came into Eretz Yisrael. That's the Ruinim we're asking. How do you know? They have to know the Ruinim we're asking. What we're saying also, that we bring in a Braita, that from this concept we see both things, that the Ebeshter knows the future and that there's going to be Tzeis HaMeisim. Tanya, we learn in a Braita, Amar Rav Elazar Rav Yehi, the Dover Zez Yachi Sifrei Minim, regarding this matter of Tzeis HaMeisim, I prove that the Sforim of the Minim, really not Minim, but Kusim, are forged. The Kusim have their own version of the Torah. It's in an Aramaic dialect rather than the Lashon Kodesh, and it's written in Ksav Ivri rather than Ksav Ashuri as we have it. And they also have various differences between it and our Torah. It's broadly the same, but there are differences. So the Balaz Rabbi Yossi is saying, I prove to them that their Sforim are corrupt. They claim that there's no Tzeis HaMeisim in the Torah. And Marasha never saw Sforim of Kusim, but he says evidently what the Gemara means is they actually changed some of the Sufim that we quoted before. And in fact, it's interesting, Rabbi Tzvi Hoffman, who lived about 100 years ago, he was the head of the Beit Medrash L'Rabbanim in Berlin. In his time, the Samaritan, the Kusi, Torah story being published, he had access to them, and he said, Taka Marsha hit on exactly what it is. If you look in some of these Sufim, you find that they took out the word Lahem, and they... Yeah, they actually took out the word lahem in some of these sukkim. For example, the one at the end of Vahoyev Shemaya, where we say Asher Nishba Hashem LaBeseichem Losis Lahem, they say the lahem, or they leave it out altogether. Asher Nishba Hashem LaBeseichem, yeah, whatever.
Right,
in other sukkim, they take out, yeah, things like that. So Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying, I prove that all that is a forgery. You're claiming Ein Tzeis HaMeisim in
Atzeret. To the opera where they're going to see
it.
The only choices that they're
going to come from. Omar Tilahem, so I said to them, Ziyachtim Tirashim, look at this. You forged, you corrupted your Torah by changing these psukim. After all, you didn't even accomplish anything because you missed one place where we have a clear remnant of Tzchias HaMeisim, and you missed it. You didn't notice it. You claim there's no Tzchias HaMeisim in HaTorah. But what about the Pesuk which says, and you have it in your Torah also, it says, Hikoris HaNefesh Ahi, that cut off will be cut off that soul who does certain Averas. Avonaba, its Avera is in it, implying Hikoris Ba'olam Hazeh. Fine, the word Hikoris means that it'll suffer Koris in this world. What is Avonaba? What is it? Its sin will be on it. La'emas, when does that apply? Lav la'olam haba v'pashtus. It must be in olam haba, that it'll still retain that Avera. So there you see that there's an olam haba. You see that there's a Tzeis HaMeisim.
But they don't accept these structures. What's the difference?
They still have to understand the words of the Pasuk that means something. They may not accept the rushes, but they still have to understand what does the word Avonaba mean. Omalei Rapapalapai, so the Pap asked Abai, never mind Avonaba. V'leimelahu tabayu mehikaris tikaris. Why doesn't he just say the very expression, Kardas Tikardas, implies a double card, one in this world and one lost in love? The answer is Inu Avra Amrile, because they would just answer him, fine, Dibur Torah Kalashim and Adam. Fine, the Torah uses common expressions. It's a common thing in Lashon Kodesh, or at least it was. In those days, it used a double Lashon like that, yeah.
Well, it's some good.
Yeah, but at least that going above proves that there has to be something else. Because it means that not only is the Kodesh Tikaris, that not only is his stuff with Kodesh in this world, but even Avonaba, nevertheless, and his Avera still remains on him, Lo'asid Lover. That even Lo'asid Lover, when it's supposed to be Tzeis HaMeisim, he's still suffering from the effects of that.
Then there can't be
then it's already done, the punishment.
No, but that's the point. In other words, not only he's cut off in this world, and he dies young and whatever, but also his neshama is cut off and does not experience Kesa Mesim and Olam Haba.
According to
this
is actually Machloit of Tanoi, how we understand that passage. What Rabbi Akiva says, Ikoris, Tikoris, and Tikoris, one of them is a Tikoris, one of them is a different Rabbi Akiva, that yes, the word Ikoris, Tikoris itself means two different Korises, one in this world, one in the next world.
What about you have the next pasuk says that he blasphemed Hashem? It's talking about either about somebody who curses Hashem or somebody who worships Avodah Zarah. And the pasuk continues with Nichrasa, and he'll be cut off. So you have three times Koris, it says in those pasukim. Are there three worlds? There's Olam Hazeh and there's Olam Haba. What's the third world? Now, mind you, I mean, the Torah Chaim points out there is. I mean, you have this world, you have Gan Eden, and you have Lost Lavan. But the answer is in Gan Eden, it's not really that the Neshama gets cut off, it's just it doesn't experience Gan Eden because instead it suffers in Gehenna. It's still there.
That's cut off in this
world, and a person dies young, and that's cut off in Lost in Lava and doesn't experience Chesem Esim, those are the two. You can't really count Olam Ha, you can't really count Gan Eden as a separate thing because it doesn't. It just suffers in Gan Eden. Anyway, so there's no three worlds.
Ella, so Rabbi Shmuel says, you have to understand the passage. The Nichrasa means Olam Hazeh. Hikoris means Olam Haba. What about Hikoris, Hikoris? What's the double expression of Hikoris, Hikoris? Find that. Dibur Torah, Koloshim Re'adam.
The Torah is just using a common expression.
So Rabbi Shmuel would say that attacking Hikoris, Hikoris means only one Koris, and Rabbi Akiva says it means two.
Well, for itself, it's come. I mean, you remember other places he says.
Yeah, Rabbi Shmuel regularly says. Rabbi Shmuel regularly says. There's many times like that where we have a double expression in a pasuk, and Rabbi Shmuel says the double expression is not meant to teach us anything specific. It's just the style of Lashon Kodesh. Only Rabbi Shmuel says it, but fine.
Okay, so the question is, Bein Rabbi Shmuel, Bein Rabbi Akiva, Avoyna Ba, my Akiva.
Fine, what do Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva do with the words Avoyna Ba, which Rabbi Lez and Rabbi Yaisi is using to prove that there's a Koreis in the next world as well? The answer is L'chadetanya. He uses it. Both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva use it to teach us this that it says in a Braisa. Yachal Akiva also Truva. You would think the person is still Chayiv Koreis even if he did Truva, or at least that he has Koreis La'asid Lavei, that is. Therefore, the pasuk says its avera is in it. It only applies. We only say this when the avera is still in it. The person does tshuva. So that's that. Because you would, as a matter of fact, actually, tshuva does not take away. The person may still suffer kares in this world because that's part of his kapara itself is that he dies young. But at least that he'll have that it'll help him. That's the chiddush of it. Otherwise, you wouldn't know.
You would think that maybe he did Shuvah very nice, but he still did it.
Doesn't mean that the guy does Shuvah. Still doesn't mean maybe that the punishment doesn't necessarily get taken away. Just like you have a person does one of the things that makes him chayiv mitzvah beis din. He does tshuva. He does all the tshuva in the world. It still doesn't save him from mitzvah beis din. That's part of his kapara. Okay. Next one. Shala Cleopatra Malchus Mayor. Cleopatra the queen Astra Mayor. Now there is the famous Queen Cleopatra in history, but she lived about 100 years before the Churban. Reb Meir lived after the Churban. So Papastras is a different Cleopatra.
Cleopatra was a common
name. Mestama, there was some other queen in that period who had that name. Whatever it is, she asked Reb Meir. Omer, she says like this, Yadaina de Chayashik Shahi. Okay, I understand that there's this concept that the Mesim are going to be revived. Dichtiv, because it says in a pasuk, be a tzitzu me'ir ke'es of aretz.
The pasuk says in Tehillim, they'll sprout forth from the city in Yerushalayim, like the grass of the field. So the famous idea that the Mesim of Chutzlaret will roll through tunnels to get to Eretz Yisrael, and then they'll surface in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim, and there they'll have Tzitzu Mesim. So I understand there's going to be Tzitzu Mesim. Ella,
she asks like this, Shein Omdin, but when they stand up, it's like Tzitzu Mesim.
Omdin ad rumin, oibol v'shein. Are they going to get up
naked, or are they going to get up in their clothing? Now, you have a lot of different explanations among Mephoshim what the point of her question is. One of them is actually the question is the goof itself is a lavush. So the question is, do we mean that they're going to have a tchias amesim neshama b'goof, or do we mean that it's going to be just a disembodied neshama? There's another verse that they say is, we know before the Chet Hadas, we just had in this last week's parasha, Vayir Shnei Marumim Adam V'Ishtei, before the Chet Hadas, they didn't need clothing because their body itself is a lavush for the neshama.
It was only one day.
I understand. So the question is, well, Asid Love, is it going to be the same kind of thing, that they're not going to have a Yetzahara, therefore they don't need clothing, or maybe first? So he answers, so kavachomer mechita. You can make a kavachomer looking at the way a grain of wheat is planted. No, I said that Mother Shabbos were doing 8:30. I said that Mother Shabbos were doing
8:30.
Yeah, he doesn't check it regularly. Give him a Gemara, please.
So the warning, what do you use?
Yeah, I said a warning because...
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it's still 8:15 on weekdays. Until we don't have big blocks anymore. I don't know. the rest of this parak, we have a lot of ground to cover. All right. Okay. He says, a kavachomer from the way that we just change. The question is whether Tchias and Mesim, are the Mesim going to come back with their clothes or not?
What other question was it?
The question is, are they going to come back naked or with their clothes? He says, a kavachomer from the way we planted. Umah wheat which is planted in the ground naked, without its various husks and shells and whatnot. Yotze v'kamal avushin. When it grows, when the wheat kernels grow, they're covered in many layers of chaff and straw and whatnot. Tzadikim shenikvarim v'lavushin. So the tzadikim are buried in their clothes. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so? Yes, they will come back with their lavushin.
Tachrichin or
different mafoshim talk about. Are we talking about tachrichin or are we talking about the clothes they wore while they were the regular clothes they wore while they were alive?
Nice kapata with a white shirt.
Yeah.
Iron.
Okay.
Hashem doesn't have a nest for
nothing. But it's not a nest for nothing. It's not a nest for nothing.
No.
No, we bury them with tachrichin because otherwise it would be a bazillion for the nest. Because otherwise, it would be a bazillion for the mess to bury him under us.
Oh, why not?
No,
you bury him in Tachrichim because you don't want that people should try to compete with each other with how expensive it's going to be. So you make simple Tachrichim. Yeah, that's the basic idea, yeah.
So it's not a rabbi.
Yeah. Okay, Omol HaKeser Ram Gamliel. Next one. The Keser asked Ram Gamliel below. Amritu Deshach V'chayim. You say, you Jews say that the dead are going to come back to life. How can that be? Hohavu Afra. They just became dust. Afra mikachayim. How does dust come back to life? Marsha points out, the point of his question was, he didn't believe the concept that the Eibishter can create yesh me'ayin. He believed in the idea, this case there, believed in the idea, it's a famous philosophical idea, goes back to Aristotle, that Rambam writes a lot in his Sfarim against it, the idea of kadmus ha'olam. There's an idea that they had, that the world has always existed. It didn't have a creator. So this case there believed in that concept. How was the Eibishter able to create yesh me'ayin?
What did the world create?
Also, they would hold it always existed.
Did she believe in the fact that the Adam was created from?
No, not necessarily. He said, saying yes.
So the one
talking
about
it's an easy answer.
Amrele Brase. So his daughter. So his daughter, the daughter of the Keser, answers. She says, Shavke, leave him alone. I know my down like, I'll answer him instead of you.
Wow.
Yeah. She says to him, Shnei Yotrim Yesh. Yeah, so actually one of the Mephoshim says, so why did she jump into the conversation? Because she's concerned Rabbi Gamliel is going to bring some proof that Tchias HaMesim applies only to Jews. She would rather it applies to Goyim as well. Therefore, she's going to bring a proof that applies equally as that could apply equally as well to Goyim as to Jews. What?
Tzadikim almost all of them.
Yeah. But I was saying, from the point of view of the daughter of the Keser, she would rather. She says, Shnei Yotrim Yesh Biyudein. I want to give you a marshal. There's two potters in our city who make kelim. Echad Yotrim in Amayim. One makes kelim out of water. The Echad Yotrim in Atit. And the other one makes kelim out of mud. Ezman Meshubach. Which one is obviously the better craftsman? Amaleh. So the case says, obviously, it's Echad Yotrim in Amayim. The one who's able to make them out of water is obviously a much more accomplished craftsman. So she says to him, Nu min amayim tzor min atit lekoshken. Nu, if the Eibishter is able to create a person from water, from a tipa srucha, which is like water, min ofer lekoshken, how much more so the Eibishter can create a body from dust? Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned that she gave a different answer. Kavachomer mekleis chuchis, that she instead gave a kavachomer from glass kelim. Ma klei tzuchis shamolan beruach basav adam. Ma the glass kelim which are created through the wind, the breath of basav adam, that you put glass on the end of a stick and blow it, and that's the glass blowing. Nishburu yeshlan takana. And yet, if glass breaks, you're able to you can melt down the broken pieces and remake the glass. boss of Adam, Shabaruch HaShalakadosh Baruch Hu, boss of Adam was created with the Eivishah spirit. Alachas Kama Vakama, how much more so with the Eivishah can we create? This is the case of his daughter, according to the second version.
She knows that
she knows this concept. She realizes that, first, the Torah does say, she respects what it says in the Torah, by Yipaklap of Nishmas Chaim. So, yeah. The reason why there's two different mishalim, by the way, one about creating from water and the other one about clay schofes, there's a sicha where the Rebbe briefly mentions the idea, because there's two different ways of looking at tchias emesim. Is it essentially like creating yeshmiayim, that the Eivishah is really going to be recreating out of nothing? Or is it, it's basically recreating what something from something, yeshmiyesh? That reflects the two things, whether you say that he's yotzim min hamayim, but there's next to nothing there, or whether you say that he's taking the broken glass and melting it down and reforming it.
So yesh miyesh or something?
Yeah, that would be yesh miyesh.
And the original one also was yesh miyesh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. It's still compared to a person, yeah. Okay, amalei ahu min l'rabam. The next one in the siwi, min asked rabami, amritu d'shach v'chai. You're telling us that the dead are going to come to life. Or Abu Afra. Same question. They become dust. How can dust come to life? Omale, said Rabami, answers, let me give you a mashal what it's like. You have a human king who says to his servants, go build me a big palace in a place where there's no water and no dirt. What are they supposed to build it from? They went and built it. Somehow or other. The Yomim Naflu.
Eventually the palace rises. He tells them, go rebuild in a place where there is water, where there is dust and there is water.
They say, we can't do it. He gets angry at them. But he says to them, but Malcolm Shane Mayim Va'offer Benissim, look at this. You were able to build in a place where there's no water and no dust. Now there's water and there's dust there. Well, how much more so? You should be able to use that raw material. So the same thing, okay, so Rashi says there are two explanations. One is that the Eivishah creates a person from a tiny little kippah where there's practically no mamashos there. So that's the equivalent of a creating where there's no water and no dust. There's next to nothing over there. The other explanation, Rashi says, is that the Eivishah, to begin with, created the world yeshmiayim.
Right.
So therefore, halachas kamav kamav, the Eivishah can recreate the body yeshmiyesh from the dust.
Right, yeah. That's the obvious.
That's the point, yeah. And by the way, Mepharshim say the reason why he couldn't use the same marshal as before, the case his daughter used, is because the question here was a little bit different. The question before was about Tchias HaBeisim in the future. The question is, the Min is asking Rav Ami is, how is it that the Tzaddikim, like Elio and Elisha, have the ability to be Mechai Meisim? That's why in the Nimshal he says that the king commands his servants to build the palace. Yeah. Okay. Then Rav Ami...
That's a different conversation.
Different question, different conversation. Yeah, okay, but it's a different
issue. So later speaks about tzaddikim later.
No, so this second one, where the min asked Rav Ami, would be about the tzaddikim. The first one, where the case of Asher of Gamliel, is talking about the Eivishah being the Chaim Meis and Lost
Above.
Okay. Continues Rav Ami, v'im iyat amamin, and if you don't believe this concept that you can have, that dirt can become something living, sail a bicker, go out into the valley, or a, and you can see an interesting creature, achbar shayim chetye bosa v'chetye adama, you can see a type of mouse, which today is half flesh and half dirt,
lamapa ishvit, later on it completely develops, the nafikula bosa, and the whole thing becomes flesh. Now what kind of creature is this?
It's interesting. You know, if you ask any scientist nowadays, there's no such thing as what they call spontaneous generation. You have life coming from non-life. You always have the, in their understanding.
Nevertheless, though, in many places in the Gemara, we have this concept that you can have creatures like that. Life stock are an example. The Gemara says that they come from sweat.
You have various things like that. The Rambam writes, Taka, in this connection, the Gemara in Chulin also mentions this creature, and the Rambam mentions that it's a well-known thing. You can ask many people who've seen such creatures. The Tiferes Yisrael, about 200 years ago, writes that there was a German scientist in his time who published a book about natural history, and he records that people have told him about that he himself saw in Egypt such a creature. So modern science doesn't know of such a thing, but okay, whatever. I mean, you have similar things that modern science does know of, animals that go into complete suspended life, like little spores or whatever, with completely dead, and then they come to life again. Okay. And pretty much moves with the dirt and then, yeah.
Okay. Shem eternal of man with your box. says, so Rabbi continues, says, okay, you might say it's fine, but it might take a while. This achbar takes a couple of weeks to develop. Well, I'll give you a different example. I'll lay lahar, go up to a mountain. Today you'll see there's only one chilozin on the mountain. Rashi, interestingly, identifies the chilozin over here as the same one that they use for chelos.
Oh, wow.
Some other mafarshim say, not necessarily, especially because that one is supposed to be in the sea, not on the mountains or whatever. So therefore they explain it means like a snail or something. It means a mountain, no regular. Lamacha yoduk shamim, the next day rain falls, v'nismali kula chelzonis. All of a sudden, the whole mountain is full of chelzonis because the eggs from the original one hatched. So therefore, you can have, all of a sudden, you have something that appeared to be completely dead, all of a sudden it becomes alive. The same thing has happened at Sesame. But it's still the idea that it's almost like Yesh Me'ayim. It's not literally Yesh Me'ayim, but it's the same way as it talks about Chassidus, you know, that we have a daily example of Yesh Me'ayim and the fact that it becomes light after it was dark. It's not literally Yesh Me'ayim, but to our perception, at least, it's a kind of Yesh Me'ayim. So this is a similar idea. Last one in the series, Amaleahu Minel Gviya Ben Pesitza, a certain min says to Gviya Ben Pesitza, Gviya ben Pesitza was a chacham who lived early in the time of the Second Beis Mikdash. We'll see soon a story involving him and Alexander the Great. So he lived in that period. And he was a great time of chacham. He was very smart. We'll see also in the story he was a hunchback. And in fact, later on in the story, we call him a hediot. One explanation is because he couldn't be a member of the Sanhedrin. We learned earlier in the Sefer, you can't be a member of the Sanhedrin if you're a Baal Mul. Hunchback is a Baal Mul. He's a Mul, yeah. So a certain min says to Gviya ben Pesitza, Vaylachon Chayavaya, woe to you, Yerushalayim, you Jewish people, Damritan Mesi Chayim. You say that the dead are going to come back to life. I have to ask you, isn't it logical that not? The Chayim Mesi, look at this, even the living end up dying, the Mesi Chayim, you expect that those who died are ever going to come alive again? Omalei, Gviya ben Pesitza answers him back, Vaylachon Chayavaya, Adarabba, woe to you to show him, Damrut and Mesi Loi Chayim, that you claim the dead are not going to come alive. I can give you a different Kavachayim, Deloi Havu Chayim, Madach, those who never existed before come to life, are created by the Ebishter, the Havu Chayim, like Koshkin, how much more so, those who lived before can live again. It's interesting, actually, you know, one explanation of this argument over here could be based on the idea. It's interesting. Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch has an interesting vote in a number of places. He says, why are Getchkes called Elilim? We say every day in Davinik, he called it like, hey, I'm Elilim. He says, because the word Elilim is related to the word Al, meaning don't. Because, he says, the Goyim make a big thing that their gods, how do they show their power? In that they prevent you from attaining what happiness you expect to get or whatever. They show their power by being mean, by being cruel, by being restrictive or whatever. Whereas the Eivishter is the opposite. The Eivishter shows his power through chesed. So therefore, the min is arguing on the basis of that if the world is run in a mean way like that, the min thinks that it's mean, then they're, yeah. So therefore, if you have people die, how much more so? You're not going to have all of a sudden the chesed that's shown that all of a sudden the dead are going to come back to life. Whereas Gviya ben Pesitza is explaining to him, the world is run with chesed, or the chesed yibana, and therefore, yeah. Amalei, so the guy gets insulted. Chayavaya, courteously, you're calling us Rishoyim. I guess he could dish it out, but he couldn't take it, as they say in English. Ika imna, if I get up, meaning Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, I don't agree. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, I don't believe in Tzeis Mason. But even if you're right, and I get up by Tzeis Mason, but itna bach, I will give you a kick. Upashitna lak musach minach, and I will straighten out that bent back of yours.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Amalei, so Gviya ben Pesitza says, Imata Oisekin, good, if you do that, Roifa Umantikore, you'll be called an expert doctor of a soccer habitito. You'll be able to get high fees. Yeah, the pastor is just a joke to be able to defuse the situation. In the Shiurim
Bagot, going to be people.
Yeah, we'll see that later, actually. But in the Shiurim Bagot of Chazal, they have an interesting vote on this last one. What does he mean by that? He means to say, he's telling them mean like this. So you're thinking that a person can just live their life however they want. You don't need to really live your life with dedication, expecting that eventually there's going to be another habit, there's going to be a state of mason or whatever. You actually think that a person can become a doctor just by kicking a person? No, you need to study, you need to devote yourself. The same way, being a yid, being a human being, demands a lot of devotion and a lot of dedication. Turn it up on him. The Estrim, since we mentioned Gviya ben Pesitza, the Gemara is going to digress and tell us another story involving his chokhmah. This comes from the Gilas Tainus. The Estrim Ba'abob Nissen, on the 24th of Nissen,
actually in Megillus Tainus, the Gira says on the 25th of Sivan, so whatever. It's Nitzut, the Rebbe points out in the Sicha, it's more logical to say the one in Megillus Tainus is correct, because there it's arranged by month. It wouldn't have been moved from Sivan. Which means it would really be Sivan, not Nissan, like our Quinton Gemara has. Anyway, it's Nitzilu Dimusnoi Miyuhudu Miyushalayim. There was a celebration that the Dimusnoi, the complainers, the ones who are Balei Chomos, Rashi says, the ones who are going to take Eretz Yisrael away by force, were removed Miyuhudu Miyushalayim, from Yehuda and from Yerushalayim. What happened? Shabo b'nei Afrikia lodon im Yisrael l'pnei Alexandros Moten. The people of Africa came to argue with the Jewish people in front of Alexander the Great, in front of Alexander Moten. What's their argument? Omrulo, they said, Eretz Knan shalonu. Eretz Knan, Eretz Yisrael belongs to us. Dichtiv Eretz Knan l'gvulotah. The prophet identifies it as Eretz Knan. O Knan abu and dahu in Shehava. Knan was our ancestors, so we should own Eretz Yisrael. Marsha explains the point of the point. Well, it's very much so. Marsha explains the point of their argument is, fine, of course the Eibishter gave it to the Jewish people, but then he took it away from them because of their Averis, so in that case it should revert to us.
Ah.
By the way, this is that they're coming from Africa. The Medrash mentions the famous thing that the Gilgoshim left Eretz Yisrael when Yeshua was going to be conquering it and moved to Africa.
Before the conquest,
Yeshua gave them three choices. You can leave the country, you can accept Shev Mitzvah Neyach and subservience to the Jewish people, or you can fight. The Gilgoshim picked the first option, the Givonim after the fact picked the second option, everybody else picked the third option and got defeated. It's interesting, by the way, there's a Byzantine historian a fellow named Procopius who writes that he visited North Africa, this is like in the 5th or 6th century or something. He says he saw there a monument that said, we, whatever the name of their people is, came here after we were thrown out of our land by the robber Yeshua ben Nun.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Subject
to
the Bilbo of
Bilbo. That could also be, yeah. Maybe some Cherubs, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so maybe some Cherubs didn't mix them up. It's true. Anyway, okay, so Eretz Canaan is ours.
They found that in Hebrew?
No, he doesn't say what language it was in, but Pashtos, it was in the local language, Phoenician.
But who found that?
A Byzantine historian, a guy named Procopius.
Wow.
Says he saw it, yeah. Okay. Amalu Gvir ben Psisa la Chachamim. So Gvir ben Psisa says to the Chachamim, Tshnuli Rishus, give me permission, Be'elach v'odin imam, with now Alexander Smokden, and I'll go and argue with them in front of Alexander. Im yinatzchuni, if they end up beating me, Imru, then you should say, okay, Hedyat Shabon and Tzachdem, fine, you defeated a commoner among us. He's not one of the Chachamim, we didn't give him authority, so therefore we'll try again, basically. Yeah. He doesn't have to make it official that he's doing it with their permission. Especially that's the reason he's calling himself a Hedyot. He's not even a member of the Sanhedrin. They could, if he ends up losing the argument, they could say, okay, some guy off the street came to argue and he doesn't represent us. We'll send a member of the Sanhedrin. The im and if I beat them, imrulahem, then you can tell them, good, Torah of Moshe, nitzachachem, the Torah of Moshe beat you.
Fair enough.
Nosna le'rshus, they gave him permission, v'holach v'donimon, and he went to argue with them. Omalahem, he says to the, in front of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great is being the judge over there, and you have the two sides, yeah. The referee, he's being the referee, and you have the two sides, okay. Omalahem, he says to the Knanim, Mehechanatim Avim Raya, where are you bringing your proof from? Omalahem in Atorda, from your own Torah. Omalahem, he says to them, Afaniloi Avilachem Raya Elamin Atorda. Fine, I'm also going to only bring you a proof from the Torah. Shenema, you have in the Pasuk says, this week's parasha, Vayom Oru Knan, that Noach said, cursed his Knan, Eved Avodim Yilech, he should be a slave of slaves to his brothers, meaning Shemen Yefet. You got to ask, Eved Shekonen Nechosim, and if you have it, an Eved acquires property, Eved Lemiu Nechosim Lemi. After all, who does the Eved belong to? To his master. Who does the Nechosim belong to? Also to the master. So you belong to us anyway, and you, even if the land is yours, the taka belongs to us anyway. Matter of fact, Marsha points out, the point is, by saying Eved Avodim Yil Echav, Echav means both Shem and Yefet. Alexander the Great is Taka descended from Yefet. But the point is, he's saying to them, even when we're subservient to Yefet, nevertheless, you, being Eved Avodim, have to be subservient to us. Don't think that Yefet, don't think that Alexander has any portion in Eretz Yisrael being from Yefet. No, he didn't snap saying it openly, but the point is that at least you're our slaves. Yeah. The Loyoid, and not only that, you owe us.
Yefet is
basically the European. It's basically the European nations, yeah. The Loyoid, and not only that, to be a continued, all these years you haven't been serving us. You owe us for that. Omrulahem Alexandros Malchus, Alexander the king says to them, Nu, Achzuloid Shuvah, give him an answer.
Oh boy.
Omrulahem, they said, Snulon is man shloshiyam, give us 3 days to think about it. Nothing Mani gave him that time. Bodku le Motsu Truva, they checked into it, they couldn't find a good answer. Miyad Bohu, so they ran away. Vinichu, so they say, and Chain Zruis for Kaman Chain the Tuis. They left their fields still planted and their vineyards still planted. But Oisa Shana Shviyasa, yeah, and that year was a Shnita. So this way, the Jewish people are able to have the crops from those fields. Now, where are these fields, by the way? Where were these fields, by the way? It's an interesting discussion. Marshal says they were in Eretz Yisrael, which means, in other words, that these goyim were already starting to illegally take land in Eretz Yisrael. But it's actually not so simple, because it's actually a big controversial issue in halacha whether if a goy acquires land in Eretz Yisrael, does that make it potter from Shemitah or not? If you say it doesn't, then what does it help that these lands temporarily belong to the Kanaanim? They still have spiritual shviyas. It doesn't help any more than it would any other place. We're saying this happened during a Shemitah. So therefore, according to that explanation, you might have to say that these fields are taka in their homeland of Africa, and the Yidden sailed over there and boats and then brought back food. On the other hand, the halacha is taka, that Amman taka paskins halacha, that a goy is, well, that Amman paskins halacha, that if a goy acquires land in Eretz Yisrael, it is maskiya, it from the dinim of Shviyas. So therefore, it could mean that these lands were actually in Eretz Yisrael.
How does he pass him that? Because
on the basis of other Gemaras, But if you have an area of it that's owned by a goy, especially nowadays when Shviyas is only the Rabbanon,
right.
then
well,
now it's
Makia. Sure,
yeah.
I mean, how can a goy own Eretz Yisrael?
The fact is, it can happen that a goy has been sold or somehow acquired land in Eretz Yisrael. Is it allowed up the halacha? Not necessarily, but it can happen. There is reality, after all, you know. Shuv kam achas bo b'nei Mitzrayim more than in Yisrael with Alexander Smith. And then another time, actually, Hagoy Sagura takes out the word kam achas. He says it was a continuation. It all happened one after the other.
Yeah.
So the b'nei Mitzrayim come to argue with the Jewish people in front of Alexander, in front of Alexander Smith. Omruloi, what's their argument? It says that Eibishter gave the Jewish people favor in the eyes of the Mitzrayim, so they lent them gold and silver and clothing and whatnot, and they took it and they never returned it. Give us the gold and silver that you took from us, that you borrowed from us and you never returned. Give me permission, and I'll go argue with them. Same thing. If they beat me, they gave him permission, and he goes to argue with them. Again, where are you bringing this from? From the Torah. Fine, I'm also going to bring your raya davka from the Torah. Shenema, the post says, Moshe b'nei Yisrael asher yoshev b'Mitzrayim, the length of the time the Jewish people lived in Mitzrayim, shloshim shana ba'alameh shana, it's 430 years. Now, of course, it wasn't. It was less than that, but hold on. So shishim ribui. So you have to pay us for the work for 600,000 male Jews, which you enslaved in Mitzrayim for 430 years. Now, it wasn't 430 years. We know it was 210 years total there in Mitzrayim, and out of that, there were only 86 years of shibud.
But still.
Understand, but still, you can't. So there's an interesting explanation that the Chidor gives on it. He says we know that 4/5 of the Jewish people died in Makas Kosha. That means we're not really talking about six. Yeah. Therefore, there weren't really, by Yetzias Mitzrayim, there were 600,000 adult male Jews, plus their wives and children. But it means before Makas Kosha, that means there were about 3 million, five times as many. How long was the Shibur? It started when Miriam was born, 86 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, 86 times 5 equals 430. So therefore, the Cheshbon actually works out.
Wow.
Yeah. The Chidah says this. Yeah, 86 times 5, yeah. Amr lehen Alexander smoked in Achzir le'tshuvos. Alexander says, give him an answer. Amr lehen, again, they said, Tznu lehen zman shloshim, give us 3 days to think about it. Nothing lehen zman, he gave them time. Bodkul le'motze tshuva, they checked and they couldn't find an answer. And in fact, by the way, the Medrash tells a story also with a little bit different details. The Medrash says they actually had the philosophim, that says their philosophers, meaning like mathematicians or whatever, sit down and actually start calculating how much the labor would be worth.
Really?
Especially, we're not just talking about simple things. You also have, for example, you could have a person who knows how to work gold or silver or whatever, where they get high wages per day. The Medrash says they got to 100 years worth of wages, anybody old Mitzrayim would be bankrupt. Yeah.
So we should have done that with the German.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Miyad hinichu to the same chenzur. So immediately, also they left their fields still planted. And they left their vineyards planted. Ubahu, but also shana shmita. So and again, that year was a shmita. So therefore, the Jewish people had plenty to eat that. The shuv pamachas bo bnei shmol and bnei keturah. What did you say?
Oh, wonderful.
Now come the bnei shmol and the bnei keturah. I'll tell you. Remind me after we finish this, I may as well tell it now. The Iyun Yaakov asked the question, why did they come in that order? Why did they all three come at the same time? He says like this, the Knanim came first. Once we disposed of the Knanim, then the Mitzvahim said, hey, wait a minute, so you guys own land.
Right.
In that case, we have what to collect from on that old debt. If all you have is Metalpilin, we can't collect on a debt from 1,000 years ago, but land we can.
Also, then, I'm thinking that the slaves, the Knanim were our slaves, so...
So the Mitzvahim figured,
Mitzvahim twisted the other way, but they didn't have an answer.
Okay. Anyway, then what happened is once we disposed of the Mitzvahim, then the Bnei Yishmael come along like this. Mela, if the Jewish people hadn't been paid for their hard labor with all that gold and silver and all, then you could argue, okay, they're the ones entitled to Israel. They're the ones who did what Hashem told Abraham, that they're going to be therefore they deserve Eretz Israel. Now that the Jewish people have just proved they just got their payment for all those years of slavery, then we should have a right, an equal right with them in Eretz Israel. So that's why now they show up. Okay. Look now, Alexander Smokin, Omrullah Eretz Kanan, Shalon of Shalachem. They say, okay, fine, we agree part of Eretz Yisrael belongs to you. A two-state solution. You see, the two-state solution is not the two-state solution is not a new idea. Because it says the Yishmael is the son of Abraham, so they're on an equal level. Again, Gviyab and Sisa says to the Chachamim, Tznuli Rishos Ve'elach Ve'adon Imam L'Fan Alexander's Moten, even at Tzchuni, again, if they beat me, Imru Hedyat Shabon and Tzachtim, you only beat a Hedyat, doesn't count. V'imani Anateach Ha'itim, even Lehem Tzertas Moshe Ben and Tzachtachem, good, not Tznuli Rishos, they gave him permission, Ve'holach Ve'don Imam, and he goes to argue with them. Amalahem Mehechan Atim Ve'im Raya, Amalahem in Atzorga, they say we're bringing our proof from the Torah. Amalahem Afani Le'oviraya Amalahem Atzorga. Good, I'm also going to bring a proof from the Torah. The pasuk says, "By Yitzen Abraham as Kol Hashalal Yitzchak." The pasuk says Abraham gave everything that he had to Yitzchak, and then the pasuk continues, "The Livnei HaPilagshim Asher LaAbraham." So the children of the Pilagshim that Abraham had, including Yishmael, Hogar and Keturah, That's why we have Yishmael and Bnei Keturah came together. Not in Abraham Matonis. It says Abraham gave them presents, implying. We'll talk about that in a second, what the Matanis are. That will be the next line of Gemara. But the point that Griev and Sisa is getting at, Av Shanos and Agstin Lavona Bechaev, if a father gives a legacy, he gives a document, a will, to one of his children while he's alive, that this son should inherit in preference to the other one, Veshigur Zem Al Zem, and he sends the other children away without any bequest. Do the other ones have any claim against the first one? No, you have a will over there. But yes, if Abraham gave Kol HaShalov Yitzchak and sent away the Bnei Pilagshim with just Matanis, then yes, it means he denied to them any part of Eretz Yisrael. So the question, my Matanis, so we have to ask, what are the Matanis? If he gave Kol HaShalov Yitzchak, what's left to give to them? Right. It means he gave them a name of Tumah. So Rashi says it means Kishuf or Maisa Shape. Means it gets down.
That's India.
Yeah. Now the interesting question is, which many of Rishonim and Achronim deal with the question, how can you give such a thing to them? Especially we learned before, we had an opinion before in the sugya of Shav Mitzvah Menayat that Goyim are also to do Kishuf. Fine, one answer is Taka the Marsha says, I'll walk a Taka not like that. Therefore they're allowed to do Kishuf.
Goyim can.
Yeah. But you have many other explanations. Among the many explanations are, he gave them, when we say a shame tumor, we don't mean, like Rashi says, kishu. We mean he gave them a shame of the Eivishter, which they're able to use the tumor. Unlike the Jewish people who have to use it for Tara, they're able to use it for tumor.
Not
Shem and Purush, but some other name of Hashem that they could use. There's other explanations.
because they need, because he's like this. They should have something at least. I don't know.
They should have silver and steel.
Maybe. There's also other explanations. He gave them kishuf, not that they should do it, but rather that they should be able to recognize it where they see it and stamp it out, just like we know that the members of the Sanhedrin had to be familiar with kishuf in order to be able to punish it.
Right.
There's the idea. Yeah. There's also the idea, for example, not so much to survive, but in order to be able to clean up kishuf in the nations where they end up. Would be the idea. There's also an idea, some of the Mefarshim explain, that kishuf is not allowed when you're doing maisa of kishuf, like we learned earlier in the Masechta. If you're using hashbas shedim, namely you know the name of a shed, and you use that shed, you use that name to put the shed under an oath that he should do what you want, such a thing as mutter. In that case, that might be what he gave them. That would be considered kishuf. So in that case, that might be what he gave them, the ability to do that, the ability to summon the shedim to do their bidding.
That's allowed?
According to, yeah, even for Jews, it's not so simple that it's not allowed. It's discussed in Shulchan Aruch. Such things may be allowed even for Jews.
We got to the point where you can do the Iglos Kalitza.
So that was a safer yitzira. That's
different. Yeah.
That's different. But here we're talking about not to do kishuf, but rather to force a shed to do what you want. Okay. Look, I mean, we find Shlomo Amalek force Ashmedai to tell him where the Shamir is.
Right, right. We didn't have that factor, though.
The golem is not using shedim. I mean, that's the spirit that was in the golem was the spirit of a shed, but I don't know. The provenance of that particular detail of the story is a little questionable. But the idea that the Maharal made the girl, fine, you made it using Sefer Yetzirah, same way as we said before, the Chachamim who created an Eglot Tilsa, you know, created a calf.
Did you hear Yetzirah about the city of Chelm made a Golem too?
Not the city of Chelm, but Rabbi Leo Baal Shem.
There's
two Rabbi Leo Baal Shems in history. One was from Worms and the other was from Chelm. The Chacham Tzvi was descended from one of them, and he writes that his ancestor made a golem. I believe his ancestor was the one from Chelm, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
That the only documented one is that one in Chelm.
Okay. Okay. The Chacham Tzvi mentions it in one of his shulchan. Yeah. Okay. And the Chacham Tzvi is descended. I knew what he was talking about. Anyway. Again, there's other answers as well. There's another answer that he gave it for them to be able to protect themselves against kishuf. There's a lot of different answers. Okay. Fine. Getting back now to the topic of tzibimim.
All the way up to minus for them. Up to minus asks them.
On the face of it, Guf and Neshama Yecholim Lifter Atman and Adin. On the face of it, both the body and the Neshama would be able to patter themselves from the Eved Shel Din when it comes to the judgment of a person after 120. Ketzad Guf Oymer Neshama.
I should show this sugya and Yotzi. United Nations.
This is also true, yeah. Ketzad Guf Oymer, the Guf can
all be the Shama Chasa, the Shama that was at the one I'm seeing, after all, from the end of Persian Medi, ever since the Shama left me,
had any mutter ke'evan domin ba'kever. I'm sitting there like an inanimate stone in the grave. I couldn't have done it by myself. The Neshama is the one who's at fault.
Or Neshama, and that is Guf Chasa, and the Neshama can all be the Guf that
sinned. Shem Yom Shepirashti Menu, because ever since I left the Guf, had any parachas ba'avir ketzipa, I'm flying around in the air like a bird, disembodied. So therefore,
it was before the Neshama.
No, but the point is the Neshama can argue with the Guf's fault. The Guf can argue with the Neshama's fault.
When a person is alive, the Neshama is in the Guf.
That's fine, but the Neshama can argue that it wasn't my fault. Especially, actually, we could be talking over here about the Nefesh HaLekis. That actually talks about in Tanya, the idea that when a person does an Aveda, the Nefesh HaLekis is sort of dragged into it against its will. So therefore, it has a good argument. I had nothing to do with it, yeah. Amalei, so Rebbe answers him. Emshalachah marshal amad devadem. Let me give you a marshal to explain it what it's like. L'melach bas of adam shaylei pardes no. You have a melach bas of adam who had a beautiful orchard. V'hoya by bakurei no. In it there were good quality early ripening figs. Well, people are going to steal them. V'hoya by shnei shomrim. So he sets up in it two watchmen, two guards. Echad chigir v'echad tzuma. One is lame and the other is blind. That way they themselves can't steal the food either. However,
so now the lame one says to the blind one, Bakuris Noran, I'm ready to hide this. Look at that. I see these wonderful, beautiful figs in the orchard. I want them, but I can't reach them because my legs don't work.
Boy Bahakiveni, come, let me ride on your shoulders. And we'll bring them and we'll eat them.
true enough, Rochav Chigra Gabi Tzuma, so the lame one rides on the shoulders of the blind one, they have him off them, and they were able to pick the figs and eat them. L'yomim Bobal Pardis, eventually the king, the owner of the Pardis, shows up. Omelahen Bakuris Noi Techenein, where are these good early figs? Omelah Chigir, and the Chigir says, obviously I didn't do it. Klum Yeshli Aglaim Ha'alachbehen. Do I have feet to walk on to be able to take them? Omelah Suma Klum Yeshli Aglaim Lirois. Do I have eyes to see where they were that I should have been able to take them? But the king is not fooled. Ma'asa, what does the king do? Hirkiv Chigir Agabe Suma. He makes the lame one ride on the blind one, just like it was when they did the Aveda. The Dunais and Kachan, and he judges them together. Afa Kadosh Baruch Hu, maybe the Neshama of a Zokum of Guf, so also the Eibishter, takes the Neshama, puts it into the body, the Donais and Ke'echad, and then judges them together.
Kind of like the Kafikela.
Yeah, some of the Mephoshim say actually that this refers to Tchias HaMesim, and the point is, in other words, that Tchias HaMesim is not only for the Tzaddikim that they should get their Tzchar, it's also for the Rishayim to be able to get their ultimate punishment, like we're saying in the Gemara here. Other Mephoshim understand that no, Tchias HaMesim is only for Tzaddikim, so therefore they understand that we're talking about over here, this is an earlier stage of the deal.
Punishment, how is it going to work? I mean, the Neshama is going to go into the roof?
The Neshama goes into the roof, and then they're punished together. They both get their punishment together because they were both partners in it. Maybe neshama v'zorka b'guf. The same thing. The Eibishter takes the neshama, throws it into the body, back into the body. V'daneis and ke'achad, and he judges them together. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yikra el shemayim me'ol. As the pasuk says, the Eibishter calls to the heavens above. Ve'el oris lodin amay, and he calls to the earth to judge his people. So what does that mean? Yikra el shemayim me'ol zu neshama. He calls to the shemayim above. That means he calls to the neshama down. The neshama which comes from shemayim, he calls. Ve'el oris lodin amay zeh guf, and he calls the guf which comes from the earth. And he judges them together. The chidah brings, it's actually originally from the rekeach, that you have a remez to it in the pasuk itself. The word, what is it? The word hashamayim is the same gematria as neshama, and
wow.
the word ladin has the same gematria as haguf.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do we say?
Good. The Eretz Nasan Livnei Adam, but the Eretz still ruled it. The Eretz still ruled that. The Eretz gave the Eretz to Livnei Adam, and we should make the Eretz Nasan.
If it was only that easy.
Since we mentioned a question from Antoninus to Rebbe, now we're going to talk about a couple of other discussions between Antoninus and Rebbe.
When did we have Antoninus?
We just had on Omar Aleph. We had at the bottom of it. We had Antoninus ask Rebbe how that the Neshama and the Guf could get out of
that. Was Antoninus?
That was Antoninus.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a good.
There's actually in history. Well, it's not so clear which historical Roman emperor is the one that we know in the Gemara as Antoninus. The generally accepted opinion it was Marcus Aurelius, and his son was a no goodnik in Roman history, but actually in the Medrash mentions there was an Antoninus Senior and an Antoninus Junior, both of whom were friends of Rebbe. So in that case, even that son, even though the Roman historians think very badly of him, he might have actually, at least as far as Rebbe is concerned, been a good guy.
That's the point.
But yes, they thought well of Marcus Aurelius, even as a friend. According to that, he was a friend of Rebbe. But you have different other opinions, which one, who they were exactly. You have a few different. The problem is that the problem is you had a number of emperors in those years who had a middle name Antoninus, so it's not so clear. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. The Yerushalmi, by the way, mentions a machloikas. Did Antoninus ever become a ger? You have one opinion, the famous idea that because he nursed by Rebbe's mother when he was a baby, we know the famous story of the switch babies, therefore we had the schut to eventually become a ger. There's another opinion that not, but that opinion says that if we do accept gerim also love, then Antoninus will be at the front of the line. Okay. Amalei Antoninus l'Rebbe. Mipnei macham of yotzer mizrach shekat v'mayra. Why does the sun rise in the east and set in the west?
What's the question?
Amalei, so Rebbe says, he have a ifcha, and if it was the other way around, you'd also ask me, what's the point of the question? Amalei, so Antoninus says, hachi kamin lo. Right, but what I mean to ask is like this. Mipnei ma shekas v'mayra. Why does the sun set in the west? So Rashi explains the point of the question is, the sun rises in the east. So why shouldn't we have that the sun should go around the entire sky and set in the same place where it rose? Why does it have to go halfway around the sky and then set at the other end? Marshall explains the question is a little bit different. Why don't we have something like the sun should rise in the east, make a complete circle, and then go to the other half of the world, make a complete circle there, and eventually set, and then eventually set back, and eventually start over. In other words, you do kind of like a figure eight, like this. Why does it have to set in the West? Amalei, so Rabbi Yemtzim can elit in Sholem Lekoina. The reason is because the sun is made to set in the West in order that it should give Sholem to the Eivishter. The Shechina is in the West. So therefore, when the sun reaches the West and it sets there, it's like it's bowing in front of the Eivishter. And as the prophet says, the host of heaven bow to you.
The Shechina is in the West.
The Shechina is in the West, we say. We learned about that in Bava Basra in connection with the Geneva town planning over there. But actually, it's interesting that the Rambam is in everywhere. We know Meloy Kolar Tzvodei. The Rambam explains an interesting idea. What we mean by saying the Shechina is in the West is we mean to say exactly the opposite of the Goyim who worship the sun, which the sun rises in the east, and therefore they bow to the east. We Davka say, no, the sun is only a servant of the Eivishter, like we're saying over here, it bows to the Eivishter, and therefore we say Davka to the other way around, the Shechina is in the west.
The
he says that's exactly why the Kodesh Kodesh is placed in the west of the Hebrew. We daven in the Mitzvah because we daven before the lion, but that's just a matter of where we are geographically. If we were living in Iran, we would daven to the west.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Kedelit and Sholom Lakona. What?
If we were living in Iran.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Kedelit and Sholom Lakona in order to give Sholom, in order to greet its creator by bowing.
Can't you give Sholom Lakona anywhere?
Ah, Shanema, yeah. Oh, Shanema, Tzvar Shalom Mohammedstadt. Omalei, so Antoninus asked him, the Tasi had Palgadirakia, so why doesn't the sun just go up until the middle of the sky, Vititin Shloma, from there it should bow to the Eivishter, Vitail, and then it should set right there in the middle of the sky.
Go down?
No, like go into the sky, disappear into the sky, kind of. And the point is, Rashi says, the point of the question is, when a person bows in front of a king, he doesn't come right before the king and bow, he bows from some distance away. So why shouldn't the sun do the same thing? The answer is Mishum Poilam Mishum Ovidrachim. The Eivishter didn't do that for the sake of workers, because you need workers, need to know when it's going to be getting dark so they can prepare, so they can come home in time and not have to walk home in the dark. Or Mishum Ovidrachim, and for travelers for the same reason. So they have advance notice that the sun is going to be setting. If it set like this, when it was in the middle of the sky, then it would come on them suddenly.
Why could you say that the sun is bowing to the Eivishter 24/7?
In that, once we say that it's setting in the west in order to bow to the Eivishter, fine, we can say that all the time it's showing its subservience to the Eivishter, but primarily we see it mostly the fact that the sun sets. By the way, the Alfred Eber mentions about this, the idea that if you walk into a palace complex and you see, you don't know who the king is, but you see a bunch of great ministers bowing to one person, tipol all of them all of pasad. You're going to all of a sudden have a fear and a dread of this person, even though you didn't know yet he's a king. The same way when you see the sun and the moon and all the stars and planets, all these great beings are bowing towards the Eivishter, then you start realizing a little bit of the greatness of the Eivishter. One of the explanations, by the way, what we're saying over here about why the sun is setting in the west, one other explanation is, we know that Bechlal, all the planets, in and of themselves, their motion is from west to east. The sun has a daily motion of about 1 degree per day from west to east, the moon about 13 degrees, etc. So the question is, why does the Galgal HaYomi, or the rotation of the earth, or whatever, force them, from our perspective, to go to the west, whereas their own motion is in the opposite direction? And the answer is, they listen, Shalom Lekhaina. Another one. V'amalei Antoninus the Rebbe. Antoninus asked the Rebbe a question as follows. Neshama me'emesai nitna ba'adam. At what point is a neshama put into a person? Mishas pekida, from the time of pekida, which means basically conception. Rashi says specifically pekida means, as the Gemara explains in Nida, that when fertilization takes place, a malach takes that fertilized drop and brings it before the Eivishter to decide what's going to be the life history of this person. Is he going to be strong or weak or rich or poor, etc.? That's the famous Gemara that says, by the way, that everything is decided there except whether he's going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. A tzaddik or a rasha like Omar. The Eivishter doesn't determine whether he's a tzaddik or a rasha because
he knows.
The Eivishter knows, but he doesn't. Right. It's a Gemara in Nidja.
Oh, we're getting there.
We'll get there in 2 years, that's the Shema. Okay, so Mishas Pekida, from that point of conception, or Mishas Yitzira, or does the neshama come in from when the baby is fully formed and they're in the mother's womb?
Yitzira is 40 days
of Pashas, yeah.
Yitzira is 40 days?
Yeah.
9 months.
Or maybe it's 9 months, maybe it's, yeah. No, no, because, well, okay, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Okay. Okay. Amalei Mishas Yetzirah. So Rebbe tells him as of the time when it's formed, either after 40 days and the basic form is formed, or after 9 months when it's completely formed, whatever. Amalei Antonina says it's impossible. How could you have a piece of meat can't even last 3 days without salt, without spoiling? How would you have that the tipa is going to last there 3 days without some kind of neshama and not spoil? And it can't spoil because it has to develop into a baby. If it spoils, then it's non-viable. It's more than 3 days. Even if it's 40 days. Even if you say 40 days, 40 days. No, but that's the question. In other words, that's what Antoninus is asking.
If the embryo doesn't have a soul,
how does it survive? How does it continue to exist? That's the Rebbe. So that's some of the Poshim said, that Rebbe would have said that it lives based on the mother's neshama. However, Omar Rebbe is El Mashat's Pkida. So it must be that the neshama comes right from when it's first fertilized, from when conception takes place. Omar Rebbe, Dova Zelim Dani Antoninus, this point Antoninus taught me, I agree with what he says, or Mikra Messiah, and you know what, you have a pasuk that supports what he says. Shenema, because the pasuk is, Ufkudos HaShomra Ruchi, from the Pkida, my soul has been guarded by you, the Eivishter. So we see the neshama is already in a person at that point.
Why do we say that until, I don't know, 30 days, we don't consider it as a
because not that it's not a goof, but we say until 40 days, it's not considered an actual fetus yet. It's considered still Maya Bahama. Fine, it has a neshama, but it still doesn't have the form of a body.
That's why Rabbi gave the first answer.
Yeah, but besides that also...
No,
that,
the first answer is different.
No, the first answer was that it comes in Meshach Yetzirah after 40 days. But you have over here the Sefer Kol Yisrael that our very own Rabbi Heber wrote on this Perek of Sanhedrin. He brings over there, he mentions over there, I'm not sure if this is his own oratory or it's from someplace else, I don't remember. He says that maybe the argument was, we're talking about the Nefesh HaLekis, primarily. We're not just talking about the Nefesh HaChiyunis that keeps a person alive, we're talking about the Nefesh HaLekis. So Rebbe is saying, it comes in Mishach Yetzirah. So Antoninus is countering that. On the other hand, if you're going to tell me that the Nefesh HaBahamas comes in first, doesn't that mean the Nefesh HaBahamas is stronger than the Nefesh HaLekis? I mean, the person is basically a behemoth, a person is basically a goy, and then maybe, okay, you have a Nefesh HaLekis on top of it. Yeah, so that's the discussion over here. So the answer is, okay, maybe the Nefesh HaBahamas comes in first. Big deal. As the Gemara mentions elsewhere, Bereisha Chasher Tzavahad HaNahara. Just like by Bereisha Olam, first came darkness, then came light. The same way, yes, the Nefesh HaBahamas can be in a person first. The Nefesh HaLekis can come in afterwards. The Nefesh HaLekis doesn't even fully enter a person 100% until Bar Bas Mitzvah. Nevertheless, though, it still has primacy. Nevertheless, a Yid is still different than a Goy.
It's much more sophisticated than the Nefesh HaBahamas, and therefore, it's not unreasonable
saying
it comes later.
Okay, another one. But Amalei Antoninus LeRebbe. Me'emasei Yetzahara Sholet Ba'adam. From what point on does the Yetzahara control a person? Meshach Yetzirah or Meshach Yetzia? From when it's formed, from when the baby is formed in the womb, or from when it comes out of the womb? Amalei Meshach Yetzirah. So Rebbe says from when it's formed. Amalei, so Antoninus says, "Im kein boyet b'meim aviyotze." How could that be? In that case, wouldn't the baby kick through the mother's womb and want to come out right away? Especially because we know the baby learns the whole Torah in the mother's womb. If the Yetzahara comes already then, he's not going to want to continue learning Torah. He's going to want out of there. Ela Meshach Yetzirah. Obviously, the Yetzahara must come and start controlling a person only from when he comes out of the womb. Amar Rebbe. So Rebbe says, Dovah Zelim Dani Antoninus. Again, Antoninus taught me this point. Umikra Messiah, and a Pasuk Taka supports him. Shenem Ala Pesach Chasas Roivet, because of the Pasuk says in last week's parasha, at the door, meaning at the entrance, when a person right away comes into the world, already Chasas Roivet, already sin, meaning the Yetzahara, is already crouching over there and trying to get. And not before, in other words, yeah. So now, Marsha asks the interesting question, what about we know that Esav, when he was in the womb, was already kicking to try and go out every time they passed by him? No, throughout the pregnancy. Because the Pashas, what we're talking about, applies to a Jew or to a Goy. And besides, this is before Matan Torah, there's not as much of a difference between Jews and Goy. Okay. So there's a number of the Marsha just leaves it as a question. A number of Acharonim give various answers to it. First of all, actually, the Sefer Chassidim, which is a Rishon, says it's not even a question of a Yetzirah. He says you have some people who he has an interesting expression. Now we know as a little bit of background, we know the Torah was given after 26 generations from Adam to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was 26 generations. Originally, the Gemara mentions in Chagiga, the Eibishter's plan was to do it after 1,000 generations. Dover Tzivola Elaf Dar. Elamai, the Abish to realize the world is not going to last 1,000 generations without the Torah. When you think about it, 1,000 generations is 30,000 years. The world's not going to last that long without the Torah. No, but okay, so what do we mean in general when we say the Abish to thought one thing and then another? Whatever, I mean, the each one is true on its own level. So therefore, the Abish to suppressed 974 of those Zodas and brought the Torah out for 26. So therefore, the Sefer Chassidim says the idea. You have certain people whose neshamas come from those suppressed generations. In terms of Chassidus, we call them their neshamas from Olam HaTorah. It's a famous thing of Chassidus that Esav neshama was from Olam HaTorah. So therefore, this that we're talking about in the Gemara is talking about the regular run of people. We're not talking about those unusual cases.
The neshamas
of Olam HaTorah, they might, well, not so much the Yetzer Hara comes earlier, but their very nature is such that they want to get out and remake the world. So it's not even a question the Yetzer Hara comes in, fine, when they get born, like anybody else. But this isn't even, the fact that Esav is kicking when he passes by a Beit HaAvod HaZarah is not even the Yetzer Hara so much, but just his own inborn nature, being from one of those neshamas of Olam HaTorah, yes.
Actually, the level of Esav was higher than Yaakov.
We talk about all over the place in Chassidus, but that's why Yitzchak wanted to give him the bracha, sure. And after all, I mean, that's the Olam HaTorah, is you want to break apart the world and remake it. That's what Torah is all about. So and that's when Esav wanted to go out by the base of his daughter, it's not necessarily because he wanted to worship them. If he wanted to break them, maybe.
Right.
But yeah. Anyway, that.
I couldn't take the Torah then.
Fine. What do you mean? Because you have to realize that Esav is not living up to his potential. The same way as Rivka realized. That's why Yitzchak needs the brachas. Esav is just going to use the brachas in the wrong way. Okay, but nevertheless, then the fact he's called Bechira after all.
I have a lot of stuff that's not my fault.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, that's one of the many. That's one of the many answers. There's other answers as well, including that here we're talking about Sholeth Ba'adam. We're talking about the Yetzer Hara dominating a person. Whereas there can be whether the Yetzer Hara actually is in a person. The Yetzer Hara can be in a person while he's in the womb, but it only starts dominating and starts exercising some kind of control after the person is born. Yeah. Okay. Getting back now to Tchiyas HaNitzvot. We keep on digressing from it. We keep on getting back to it. Rish Lakish Rami. Rish Lakish pointed out a contradiction between Pesukim. Ksiv, one pasuk says that when Mashiach comes, Bom Iver Piseach, among them will be the blind and the lame, Horavi Aledes Yachdav, the pregnant and the one who's giving birth together. Uchtiv, you have a different pasuk that says, Od Yedalig Ka'ayo Piseach, then the lame one will jump around like a gazelle, the Torah in Loshen Ilim, and the tongue of the mute will sing, Kinivku Bamid Bamayim, because water will break forth in the desert, and the Cholim Ba'arava, and streams in the desolate areas. So in other words, the question is, when Mashiach comes, are there going to be blind and lame people, or are they all going to be healed and going to be jumping and singing? That's the answer. Okay, said they're going to get up with their mumim that they had while they were alive, and then they'll be healed from them. The Medrash, by the way, it's not so obvious. You would think they should be.
How can they start from scratch?
So the Medrash actually says an interesting reason. Why Takah does Abish do it that way? Why doesn't he recreate them all perfect? Because then people wouldn't realize it's the same people.
Right.
Like this, people would say it's not the original people who died and Abish is bringing alive. He's just creating new people. Like this, you can see it's the same people.
The memory of the world helped.
Yeah.
Okay, what does it say that the Chesamesi Mashiach, I mean, what's...
pretty much, yeah.
According to Nigla.
Yeah, according to Nigla, yes.
Okay,
no, we haven't really gotten into it. We haven't really gotten into it so much yet. There is, generally speaking, the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Malachim that we're not sure really of the Seder of things exactly, but the general idea is usually that you're going to have Mashiach and then Chesamesi. But you have opinions that say that there'll be Tchiyas HaMeisim first for the special tzaddikim, that they'll come alive even before Mashiach. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Before Mashiach.
Before Mashiach. Okay.
And we're all going to get to meet them.
Ula Rami. Ula pointed out a similar contradiction in a pasuk. Ksiv, one pasuk says, Bila HaMavas Lanetzach. One pasuk says, the Eibishter will swallow up death forever. Umacha Hashem Dima Me'akafanim. Hashem will wipe off tears from all faces, implying nobody will die anymore. Or in Mashiach's time, Uchtiv, but you have a different pasuk that says Ki Anar Ben Meir Shana Yomus. Another pasuk says that even a person who dies at 100 years old will be thought of as a youngster. You know, people will live long, so even like 100 years old who dies will be thought as a poor boy. That's the question. Lo Yir Misham Oid Ul Yomim. Nobody at that point will die at young ages. The minimum will be 100, but other people will die. So what is it? Are people going to die or not?
Right.
The answer is like Kasha, can be Israel, can be Obed Kachavim. One is referring to the Jewish people, won't have Misa anymore. The other is referring to the Goyim. The question is, what are Goyim doing in Yemos HaMashiach anyway? In Yemos HaMashiach, the world is going to be on a different level. They're not going to be equivalent, etc. The answer is, Hanech Tichtivu, the Goyim of whom it says, V'omdu Zorim V'ro Tzaynchem, that strangers, meaning Goyim, will stand and pass through your sheep, V'nei Nechu, Yikarechem, V'karmechem, and then strangers will be your plowmen and taking care of your vines. In other words, they'll be doing the work as Rambam says, Kadesh Yizku, the point is, that Rambam says, at the end of Hilchos Malachim, that's like this, what the Loinitz Av, and also actually today's three parakim of Rambam, that why do the Chacham and the Nevi'im want Yemos HaMashiach? In order that this way they can be free to learn Torah and do mitzvahs and to be zeichel chayy and abba. So therefore, the point is, the necessary work of keeping the world running will be done by Goyim. So therefore, those are the Goyim who will be around in those days.
Righteous
Goyim, basically, we're talking about, yeah.
So this Goyim, the coming
forth. So maybe they'll come alive by Tchias Meisim, or maybe they'll be the ones who are still alive at that time. But whatever, the point is, they'll live longer than any person lives now, but they'll still. Yeah, it could be that, or it could be just Kam Goyim, or still alive. The city of Masor, the might, but yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. No, but you remember our Mishnah mentioned one of the ones that Ein Lahem Chelek L'Olam Haba was Bilam, implying that other Chassidim of Yisrael do have a Chelek L'Olam Haba.
That's an interesting.
So that's
point.
You know, there is that point, right?
I mean, Chelek L'Olam Haba doesn't mean having a Chelek to Tchiyat HaMeisim.
That depends what Olam Haba means. We just talked about yesterday that according to the Rambam, Olam Haba means what we call Gan Eden, and according to most other Rishonim, Olam Haba means Tchiyat HaMeisim and Yemos HaMashiach.
So for us, maybe it's Tchiyat HaMeisim.
Okay.
Gan Eden.
Yeah, we don't know. Okay. Fine. Rav Chista pointed out a similar contradiction. Ksiv, one pasuk says, "V'chofra alavano v'oshachama." The moon will be shamed and the sun will be embarrassed. Ki malach Hashem tzvakas, because Hashem tzvakas will be ruling. In other words, like their light will be completely eclipsed. Uchtiv, but you have a different pasuk that says, "V'chofra alavano v'oshachama." This light of the moon will be as strong as the light of the sun. V'oshachama yishivasayim ka'ushivasayomim, and the light of the sun will be sevenfold as strong as the light of the 7 days, meaning it'll be 343 times as strong as it is now, 7 times 7 times 7. So what is it? Are they going to be eclipsed, or are they going to be much more powerful than they are now? The answer is like Kasha, Kamli Moisa Mashiach, Kamla Olam Haba. You have Moisa Mashiach, and you have Olam Haba. So according to the Rambam, Olam Haba means the world of Neshamas. In other words, the Rambam says Yemos HaMashiach means the period when Olam Kimin Hagei Noyeg, and Olam Haba means the period after that, after there's only Neshamas. According to everybody else, what it means is, and we talk about that in many places in Chassidus, that there's going to be two tkufas in Yemos HaMashiach itself. There's a period when Olam Kimin Hagei Noyeg, and then there's a period after that when the world is on a completely different level.
So this healing will happen.
What? The healing of Pashas will happen in the first one. Maybe in this one, second one.
As soon as they wake up.
So the question is, what about according to Shmuel, who says the only difference between this world and Yemos HaMashiach is just that we won't be subjugated to the Goyim, but other than that, the world will still run normally. So what are you going to have? The sun and moon are not going to be any more powerful than they are now. The answer is, according to that, like Kasha, kan machne tzaddikim, kan machne shchina. One is in the camp of the tzaddikim. The tzaddikim will have the sun and the moon, but they'll be much more powerful than they are now. In the machne shchina, closer to the Eibishter, they're completely eclipsed by the light of the shchina.
So still
you still have a distinction. In other words, that within Yemos HaMashiach itself, that you have a within the machne shchina where you don't need the sun and moon, but then at a lower level, you're going to have the sun and moon, but at a more powerful level.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.